From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for June the 4th, 2017. Yes, we're finally into June. Welcome to our weekly look at the politics and policies that shape your lives, be it Chicago, the state, or Washington, D.C. Time to grab the Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your day and your week off to a great start. Well, I'll tell you, yesterday was probably the most beautiful day I can remember in Chicago. It was just absolutely perfect.
It felt downright hot, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Friday did, actually, as well. You were away from the lake as I was on Friday afternoon. You know, you got out of your car, and it felt like July out there, or
wow.
August.
Not
a complaint from this guy.
I'm not complaining. And I have to tell you, even like this morning, because the humidity is up there a little bit.
Yeah.
So you can start feeling what we're going to be.
We're looking at 70% relative humidity right now.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, because it's only like around 72, 74 degrees out there. But
correct.
Yeah, it's a little bit muggy, and wow. I mean, finally, we've turned that long-awaited corner. I would have loved to have been out at Wrigley yesterday. That just had to have been a beautiful day. And and of course, I even tweeted out, I said, you know, what's the best way to rehab out of a slump? Bring in St. Louis, you know.
Good call on that.
You know, and Schwarb's getting that grand slam was just fantastic. And so apparently there were six grand slams hit yesterday in the majors.
Big league record.
Yeah.
For one day.
Six
amazing.
In one day?
Correct.
Wow.
And two were pretty big. I mean, the Schwarber home run, obviously, for the Cubs fans. And then Albert Pujols became the first man to ever hit a grand slam for his 600th career home run.
Yeah, I knew about that he'd gotten the 600, but I didn't realize that was a grand slam on top of it.
Yep.
And, I mean, what a career Albert Pujols had. I mean, he always killed us when he was with the Cardinals. And, you know, you see these players on other teams that it's, gosh, could you imagine if they just played for us kind of thing?
I remember there was talk about that a long time ago with free agency coming around that there would be some way the Cubs might be able to get him, but didn't happen, and I think the Cubs are pretty happy with Anthony Rizzo.
Oh, yeah, but that was the old Cubs.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not the new Cubs. And but, yeah, great back-to-back wins against the Cardinals, and they've got a night game tonight, I guess.
Correct.
So is that one of those network games?
Yes, tonight? It is. The four-letter network.
Yeah.
We'll take that one, yes.
That's kind of what I assumed. Mm-hmm. So, and that's going up against the U2 concert. You got the NBA Finals?
Yep, NBA Finals finally back underway tonight.
Wow. I mean, all kinds of things going on.
Not to mention all these festivals going on. There's too many to mention going on. Taste of Little Village, as we mentioned in the newscast, Division Street Fest going on. They are going to be closed at Division between Levitt and Damon until Monday. So,
wow,
you know, that's just a couple of what's going on around here.
Yeah, and it's
summertime.
Well, and I know folks that went to Wrigley Field for the Cubs game and then headed back south on the Red Line to go to Soldier Field for the U2 concert last night. And I'm thinking,
must be nice to be young again.
I guess. And I'm thinking U2 playing tonight, I mean, that's going to be kind of rough going to work on Monday morning if you go to that concert tonight.
Especially if you go to both of them.
Well, I'm thinking there have to be at least 50,000 no-shows for work on Monday morning.
Especially with the weather.
Yeah.
The weather alone, let alone the U2 concert.
Well, and I kind of got the sense Friday, as nice as Friday was, the things did not look as busy here in the office as I have a feeling some people were taking a little bit of
They weren't feeling all that well.
Yes, there were some early afternoon sick leave going on, but No, it seriously, though, it was very empty. And, of course, I told Schwani off the air, I did get a chance to enjoy some of the outdoor weather, but mainly I was sitting in a union hall listening to Democratic candidates for governor. That was how I spent my Saturday. So it's like I say, I do it so you don't have to kind of thing. We're going to, speaking of Democratic candidates for governor, later in the show, we've got Democratic candidate Chris Kennedy will be here in studio in the 8 o'clock hour, and we'll be talking to him about his campaign. We've also got Greg Bays at 7:30. He's the head of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. We'll be talking to him about the recently adjourned or still in continuous session, spring session of the legislature. And it's one that employers call one of the worst that they've ever seen. We'll also be closing up the show with Keith Wheeler. He's a Republican state rep from Oswego, and we'll get the House Republican perspective of what happened down in Springfield. So we've got a great show full of a lot of information. The trouble is, I'm not sure about that we can talk much about that spring session in Springfield because Dave, once again, ended with a whimper.
Yeah. No real final adjournment, you know. And
no budget.
And no budget. So it's now going into the third year, fiscal year.
Yeah.
If you can even say there is a fiscal year.
No, you're absolutely right. I kind of was wondering maybe we should think about Bill Murray for governor, and because we just have Groundhog Day all the time. It's really getting pathetic with this, and who knows about any kind of resolution coming at any time.
At any time.
Well, certainly we'll be talking about that later in the show. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news, and Andy's in for Sam, and he's got all the sports for us. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, all one word. We're on Twitter as well, @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here to keep everything afloat on the good ship 720. Don't forget, if you have to tune away, you can always find our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin, a little homage to the folks who went last night to Soldier Field and the ones going tonight for the U2 Joshua Tree concert. Outstanding music. Well, it's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and of course, Dave's been keeping us up to date on the terror attack in London that occurred yesterday.
Rick, can I just jump in here very quickly just to update things that London police have arrested 12 people in connection with this attack. Also, Ariana Grande is scheduled to take the stage again, despite the attack yesterday in Manchester, for the benefit to help the victims of the suicide bombing from a few weeks ago. So,
all right. Well, and Dave, as always, of course, jump in with any of the latest news you get on what's going on in London.
We will have more at 7:30.
Certainly, President Trump has been back on the Twitter about this. Last night he tweeted out that we need to be smart, vigilant, and tough. We need the courts to give us back our rights. We need the travel ban as an extra level of safety. And, of course, the travel ban is a subject of a Supreme Court appeal by the Trump administration after lower courts had blocked it. Trump also saying that whatever the United States can do to help out in London and the UK, we will be there. We are with you. God bless. Then this morning, He started tweeting, we must stop being politically correct and get down to the business of security for our people. If we don't get smart, it will only get worse. Then he went on to tweet less than an hour ago, at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and Mayor of London says there is, quote, no reason to be alarmed, quote. And then finally, just about a half hour ago, the President of the United States takes to Twitter to say, do you notice we are not having a gun debate right now? That's because they used knives in a truck. So that's the thoughts of our president on the terrorism attack in London. Of course, as always, over the last week, President Trump dominating the news, the president announcing last week that the U.S. would drop out of the Paris Climate Accord. It was something he had vowed to do as a candidate, but his decision, despite promises to keep the U.S. working on reducing pollution, was far from satisfying for many. Here's the president.
The same nations asking us to stay in the agreement are the countries that have collectively cost America trillions of dollars through tough trade practices and, in many cases, lax contributions to our critical military alliance. You see what's happening? It's pretty obvious to those that want to keep an open mind. At what point does America get demeaned? At what point do they start laughing at us as a country? We want fair treatment for its citizens, and we want fair treatment for our taxpayers. We don't want other leaders and other countries laughing at us anymore, and they won't be. They won't be. I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
He represents Pittsburgh, but not Paris. But even some Republicans, not necessarily in Pittsburgh, but in South Florida, they're not happy with Trump's decision. Here's Republican Congressman Carlos Curbelo of the Miami region speaking on CNN.
I don't know about the people of Pittsburgh, who I have great respect for, but people in South Florida live between the Everglades and the ocean. Most of us live near sea level and near the sea. We're already seeing the effects of saltwater intrusion into the Everglades, which threatens our drinking water supply. We're also seeing coastal properties under threat, real estate, billions and billions of dollars. So down here in South Florida, we understand that the environment and the economy are one and the same. And we also understand that pollution and CO2 emissions don't respect national and even continental boundaries. What happens in India, what happens in China has an impact on all of us. So I'm very disappointed that we've withdrawn, that we have left our seat at the table vacant, that we have yielded leadership to countries like China, like Russia. I really hope this administration reconsiders and adopts a responsible environmental climate policy that promotes American innovation, job growth in this country, the jobs of the future, the jobs that young people who are graduating from college need. So down here in South Florida, I know there's a lot of disappointment today as a result of this decision.
Now, Trump's decision also sparked criticism across the globe. New French President Emmanuel Macron invited Americans, including climate scientists, to come to work in France. Here are some highlights from Macron, and note how he ends his speech.
Responsible citizens who were disappointed by the decision of the President of the United States, I call on them, come and work here with us. To work together on concrete solutions for our climate, our environment. I reaffirm clearly that the Paris Agreement remains irreversible and will be implemented not just by France, but by all the other nations. I call on you to remain confident. We will succeed because we are fully committed. Because wherever we live, whoever we are, we all share the same responsibility. Make our planet great again.
Make our planet great again. Those are the words of the French president. There are some who say Trump decided to abandon the Paris Accord in an effort to change the storyline and divert attention from the continued multiple investigations into possible collusion between Russian agents and Trump's presidential campaign. Former FBI Director James Comey is supposed to testify to Congress this week. The Trump campaign had originally said that it had not ruled out using executive privilege to try to block his testimony, but that appears highly unlikely. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin appeared on a panel in St. Petersburg, Russia, and denied Russian influence in the U.S. election. Here's Putin speaking through a translator.
The Trump team has turned to be more efficient during the electoral campaign. Sometimes I thought that, well, he overdoes, he overkills, I thought sometimes during the campaign. But it turned out that he was right. He's been able to find approach and to reach out to those electors whom he hoped for, and they voted for him. And the other team, they made a mistake, and they don't want to recognize this mistake right now. They don't want to say that they were not wise enough. It's easy to say it's not our fault. It's the Russians. They intervened. They interfered. It's like anti-Semitism. The Jews are to blame. You're an idiot because the Jews are to blame, right? And you know what such moods lead to? They will not end up in nothing good.
That was the translation of Vladimir Putin speaking at a conference in St. Petersburg, Russia, denying any involvement by the Russians in the U.S. presidential election. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on The Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Gregory Bays. Greg is the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. We'll be talking to him and get the perspective from manufacturers and business on the gaveling out of the legislature Wednesday. Later in the show, we'll have Chris Kennedy, Democratic candidate for governor. And then we'll also be speaking with Keith Wheeler. He's Republican state representative from Oswego. And we'll talk to Keith about the House Republican perspective of the goings-on that occurred in Springfield. And now the fact that the legislature is once again in what's known as continuous session as the state's budget impasse drags on now for more than 700 days.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue in Tribune Tower. And joining me on the phone this morning is Gregory Bays. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Greg, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great. I want to take one moment. I'm looking at the editorial that appeared today in the Quad City Times, and I just want to read from it, if you'll bear with me. We thought long and hard last week about our position as the General Assembly moved toward adjournment. Fact is, it's all been said. No measure of rage or righteous indignation from any corner of the state will quash the personal feud between Rauner and Madigan. Neither man stands to benefit from sudden consensus. This is all about the 2018 election. This is about Madigan's desire to oust Rauner and again make Illinois a one-party state. It's about Rauner's lust for weakening Madigan's veto-proof dominance in the House. In the end, voters in Illinois might be left with a Faustian choice come 2018. Both sides own this now. No voter revolt in districts held by backbenchers of either party will fix it. What do you think, Greg?
Well, I think that sums it up. I mean, it is the frustration I hear from my members and what I hear from just regular people who come up to you and say, what's going on down there? There's this incredulous feeling that how can they not solve this problem? The kind of destruction across the landscape of Illinois is everywhere. Social service agencies, students wondering if they'll have MAP grants this fall when they go to school, to schools even opening. So the level of anger that's out there is palatable. And I know that the leaders in Springfield understand it, but we have got ourselves painted into a corner, and people don't want to get out of it. And I think the suggestion has to be, you got to go find another corner here real quick, or the damage that's being done to the state, it may well be irreversible in many senses.
Well, and you look at the fact that, basically just hours after the legislature adjourned, two of the credit agencies downgraded Illinois once again, sending other agencies that are accountable for receiving state money into junk bond status, Illinois just hovering above junk bond status. And in any solution for this, there'll be some need to do some borrowing, and so those costs grow ever exponentially. Right. And as you said, the hole just keeps getting deeper and deeper.
I think we've got to focus on what can be done. Here before June 30th, there is that glimmer of hope that there could be some kind of solution before that, and different ideas that are floating around need to be explored. I mean, the Senate solution that was talked about endlessly through the spring session, the grand bar, had all the elements of what need to be accomplished here. We were very close in getting some things done there from some of the business standpoint of what we're interested in. We're right there. The spending, people have got to understand the spending issue. We're generating about $32 billion a year, a lot of money. But the problem is we're spending on paces somewhere in the $37 billion arena. We have got to close that gap. It does need revenues. Members of the business community, such as myself, who lobby down there, have been saying that all year. We've been saying actually the number one priority is get the fiscal house in order. Illinois has spent well beyond its means for way too long, and that's really what got us to this point. The feud that you mentioned that the Quad City Times talks about has been there. There is no doubt about that. Governor Rauner has made it very clear the trajectory that Illinois has been on, we can't continue that direction. We have to change that. I think even Speaker Madigan understands that. He just says it will be done on terms that will not hurt the constituencies that he represents. So the point here is that people have to continue to apply pressure. I think the mayor of the city of Chicago is still a key element of making that happen. I think the kind of tack that's reported in the Tribune this morning or yesterday about the education bill, urging Governor Rauner to consider that as a potential, is the kind of language and rhetoric we need to have more than the rhetoric that we have been hearing, especially in the last weeks of the session.
I just worry that we've gone so far into 2018 politics at such an early stage that, I mean, that's the corners.
Right. Well, there is no doubt that the emergence of Pritzker as a candidate and television commercials and sort of the switch being flipped on 18, I think, did have some influence in the waning weeks. Not being critical, I mean, the political seasons start earlier and earlier. But that added an element that really was not there early in the legislative session, not blaming the campaign. But that started to change, and I think the attitude of some Democrats, who you as mentioned in the editorial, all we got to do 18 months really isn't all that much. We can now wait this guy, and we'll beat him. And I think that feeling is there among some Democrats.
But in the meantime, the crumbling just of the state just continues.
That is true. So I think, Rick, that the idea of trying to find possibly a temporary spending plan that could get us through the next 2 years ought to be an idea that is explored, a notion that, heck, even as crazy as looking at, do we need to continue? Do we make the pension payment for the next year? Governor Christie in New York in New Jersey as an example. During his financial, he got a bill passed to adjust the amount of money that's sent in there each year or each month. So, you know, there are ideas out there floating around that could temporarily arrest this problem. And maybe we just got to fight it out one more time in this election cycle as a notion. So any of the ideas that have been talked about need to be re-explored, talked about what can we get 30, well, actually, as you know, right. 36 and 71 is the, but you're not going to solve this problem unless you have everybody on both sides agreeing to something.
Well, you were part of a group of business interests that held a press conference on the final day, scheduled day of the legislative session.
Right.
That referred to the work of this legislature as one of the work of this session being one of the worst for employers. And you, in talking about the Senate grand bargain kind of proposal, one of those issues that was under discussion was the issue of workers' compensation changes. But what ultimately got adopted was not the result of the compromise that everybody had been talking about.
No, it was a slap in the face at the business community, really. The fact that many want to point that the 2011 reforms have not, and workers' comp have not done what many feel it should have. So one of the responses to that is that we should set up a state fund. Now let's think about this for your listeners real quick to think that the state of Illinois, the way it's operating today, can, quote, get into the insurance business, run an insurance company that provides workers' compensation benefits for workers more efficiently than the 300 companies that are writing insurance plans in the state of Illinois right now. I don't believe anybody's going to believe that that's a real solution. It's really just a way, it's a talking point for those on the other side of this issue to obfuscate the real issue, the fact that we have the eighth highest cost in the country. Our medical costs are much higher than our surrounding states, and that we need to continue to make some fundamental reforms to bring Illinois back into the middle of the pack. Just 10 years ago, 12 years ago, we were 23rd highest in the country, and we could get back to that if we would make those changes. The worst session in our memory, the comment that was made, is really brought on not only by workers' comp, by the fact that the $15 minimum wage was passed. That is a message sent to the business community, which would put Illinois at the very top ranks in that particular area. It happens in manufacturing. It's in retailing. It would ripple through the entire business community of making us less competitive. There are other paid family leave. Family leave is a very important issue in how it's done. But this General Assembly even went so far in its last session for companies that have family leave, regulated how they give family leave. This state government can't keep its nose out of how business operates. And that's what causes leaders of organizations such as ours, the retail merchants and others, to say, hold on here for a minute.
We're speaking to Greg Bays. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. See each other nails, into the souls on the chill face. From the firefly, the red orange glow. See the face of fear. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Joining me on the phone is Greg Bays, president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. And we're talking about businesses' reaction to what didn't get done, what did get done in the Illinois legislative session as it continues, as we still continue to go without a budget past 700 days. And, Greg, before the break, you were talking about some of the other items, the, quote, dirty dozen items that were the legislature did. But I want to go back to the issue of workers' comp, because I keep hearing from various interests that before the negotiations broke apart, that on the issue of workers' comp, that the sides were very close to getting an agreement. Is that the case?
It was. We were involved in the discussions between the Senate President's office and others on a bill that would have moved the ball forward. It wasn't going to be a radical change of things. But, you know, Rick, you and I have been around a long time. You don't get everything you want in Springfield. You keep moving the ball forward. And we literally were down to the last there was one sentence that was being talked about. I know people got scratched there. Head and think, one sentence, what do you mean? Well, unfortunately, words matter in legislation. And then discussions were broken off. And they were done so not so much about the issue of work comp. It was all part of the inability to move forward on the education funding issue, on some of the other revenue sources. And so it was caught up as the discussion of this all went forward, the grand bargain. And there was a pullback. There were discussions about something as arcane as AMA or American Medical Association guidelines. Those are the guidelines used by the Work Comp Commission to settle impairment issues. What is the level and the degree of impairment that you may have suffered in an injury? A lot of people adamantly oppose it and say, we just can't have it. 35 states use it as its exclusive remedy. It's not the end of the world, you know, on either side, if you're just willing to accept a compromise. And unfortunately, those elements who fight mightily against any kind of change in workers' compensation laws, those are the interests that, I hate to use the terminology, but I'll use it, feed off of the system. It's a $3 billion system each and every year that goes forward. And those interests don't want to see anything change because workers' comp is very, very lucrative to those who in the medical community or in the legal community are around it.
Right. I mean, it's, what happened to the days where you kind of had that, I guess, the old agreed bill process of...
Well, that had gone by the wayside. Some elements, both on the Democratic side and even Governor Rauner, had been critical of the agreed bill process. The fact that it was just that, you agreed to not go too far, would be the criticism of it. It worked, but it also only worked, Rick, when you had the leadership in the General Assembly and the governor imposing from the top that the interest groups involved, labor, business, come to an agreement. They would be pushing from the top down to pressure those kind of solutions. That's not there any longer, and so therefore that old process just does not work.
I always thought, at least, as you said, it forced compromise. And granted, it may not have moved the ball that greatly, but at least it was dictated, don't come out of that room until you got an agreement.
That's right. And, Rick, as we also know that when big things are accomplished in Springfield, you have to have the leadership, both in the executive and the legislative branch, communicating and working together because it just happens. It has to work that way, that the pressure comes from people. The education funding issue, as an example, that's being talked about. The agreement that got passed is nowhere near much of the discussions that were going on about that issue. Again, it was sort of a left turn was made toward the end of the General Assembly that we're going to go ahead and we're going to pass some things. But damned with what Republicans are saying. We're not going to take their good ideas and solutions, which they've only been talking about the day before, and move forward. So things got politicized in the last really 72 hours or longer in the waning days there. And then it was a session that just ended with a thud. You and I have seen a lot of things go on in Springfield. The chain gang, we had the demonstrations down there this week, and remember ERA. We remember Governor Thompson essentially stopping the clock to save the White Sox stadium.
Keep them in Chicago,
We've seen a lot of things occur when the will is there. This problem can be solved. Unfortunately, the will has not arrived at everybody's doorstep strongly enough.
Well, you mentioned kind of the left turn that the legislature took at the end, and things like raising the minimum wage and some of these other pieces of legislation, which ultimately just seem to be bills that were Democratic initiatives that are going to a Republican governor with the knowledge that he's going to veto them, and it just becomes part of the, once again, just this political chatter rather than really any progress on either side.
It really is, and what really is driving, I think, those of us who watch this process work really just sort of be crazy about this is that how can you let this continue? Unfortunately, one of the pressures that always was there was the fact that you had to get state employees paid. When public employee unions went to a judge in St. Clair County, got a court order to continue to pay state employees, literally in August 2 years ago, when this impasse first started, And so state employees continue to be paid. Governor Rauner supports that. He doesn't want to see state government stop. But if you did not have that particular court ruling, which Lisa Madigan is moving forward slowly through the courts to try to overturn, and state employees were not being paid, how quickly do you think this problem would get solved? It'd be solved fairly quickly. But the pressure points that have been there in the past have been relieved. And without those pressure points, there is no interest or desire to really get it done. And we've now arrived at the political season of 2018 that even makes this more difficult.
Well, and as you touched on earlier, too, about not knowing about schools opening, and part of me just wonders if the fact of having school openings in the fall in jeopardy might be the pressure point.
Well, it was suggested by some that the school superintendents of the state do have a key here, saying that those who have are very close to insolvency, and there are those that are like that around the state, inform their athletic directors that the kids can't go out on the football field in August to start practicing for the fall football season. You know, if you said that start occurring across the state, again, there would be a huge outroar. It would all of a sudden, the state government would be touching into homes that it doesn't normally
exactly,
touch.
Exactly.
And so if you have some things start to occur like that, school districts that can't open, I mean, Rahm Emanuel said he's going to move heaven and earth to make sure that the Chicago school open. But if all of a sudden you have those kind of situations occur, again, that pressure will build enormously on those in Springfield.
We've been speaking with Greg Bays. He's the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Greg, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Good talking to you, Rick. Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Democratic candidate for governor, Chris Kennedy.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me here in studio this morning is Chris Kennedy, Democratic candidate for governor. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
You're great to have me out, so appreciate it.
And congratulations again. You've got graduation. It's graduation time, and you've
it
got
sure
a
is.
Graduation in the family. So.
I got one graduated from college last weekend, and one's graduating from high school this weekend. So it's fun to have all the kids home and grandparents and everybody around.
And also come out and help you on the campaign trail, right?
They've been doing that as well. Young Chris and Kate were out Western Illinois on Friday night. Is that right? Thursday night, and apparently did a great job, so.
Well, you had, in this past week, you launched kind of a new phase of the campaign. We're kind of past the introductory phase, and now you began what you basically said was the first in a series of deep dives into various subjects of what your vision is for the state of Illinois. And you specifically were talking about, for 33 minutes, the issue of property taxes and the property tax system in Illinois. In your view, that basically it would be extortion if the laws were changed. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'll explain the property tax issue.
But I'm not giving you 33 minutes.
No, I'm not going to, and I wouldn't take it. But the reason you want to fix property taxes is because we pay for our schools with property taxes. And about 75% of the kids who graduate high schools anywhere in Illinois, public schools, are not prepared to go on to community college or trade school. University without remedial education. That's a huge number, 75%, right off a state website. The fact that they can't do that without remedial education, maybe that's not shocking in the Chicago area where we can overcome it. Within a mile or two of your studio, there's, you know, 25 places that you could take courses in remedial education. But outside of the Chicago area and the Cotter counties, it becomes harder and harder to get access to that remedial education, which means we really need to fix the high schools. The only way to do that is to fix the broken property tax system.
Well, but I want to say that in some respects that seems almost endemic, because even when I went to college a long time ago, decades ago, but my first year at Southern Illinois University, I went to go pick up my books, and I ended up proficiencying out of four of my first five classes because they were the same books that I'd had in high school. And so it seems like it was built into the system of high school to higher education is this automatic assumption that there ought to be, or an automatic need that there ought to be remedial work that takes place.
Well, we can accept that. I suppose we could accept that and say that high school isn't providing our kids a proper education. They have to get it later in life. But you were lucky. You went to a big high school with lots of programs that allowed you to get into a great college. That great college had the resources. But many people aren't going to be able to test like you did or have a class rank like you did and not get into a school like you did that is going to allow for that, or have parents that are able to support you during that period. Those kids will then fall behind. They'll fall behind, and they'll believe that the American economy is meant to crush them, that is not allowing them to rise from rags to riches, to live in the land of the free, the economically free, that they will not see America as the land of opportunity. If they don't see our country as keeping the promise of our country, they're going to elect people who want to destroy the economy and put our country at risk. You want to know where the Trump voter came from? It came from our high school education process, where those kids are undereducated, can't be part of the 21st century economy, are mad as hell, which they should be, and they vote for Trump because they want to blow the system up.
One of the interesting things I thought you talked about in that property tax speech was that we're seeing kind of this, as we see an economy that where we have the imbalance of wages and inequality there, that we used to have communities where wealthy people were part of a community that helped support the tax structure, tax system that goes to schools. And now we're basically seeing kind of a wealth separation, segregation, and that the poor communities get even poorer. And and there is no tax base to support an educational process that provides equality.
You look back on the history of the funding mechanism for schools, and it was developed at a time where the economy or the makeup of our population, which was much more homogeneous in terms of income and wealth. But then we had enormous wealth disparity was created really since the 1980s under President Reagan. And now there's this whole group of super rich individuals, and then they move away from everybody else. We have enormous economic segregation where the rich live near the rich and the poor live near the poor. When you base your full school funding on a property tax system, that's a disaster for people who live in less wealthy communities because they don't have access to the tax base that can properly fund the schools. So huge disparities are created in terms of outcome for our kids. That's not fair. That's not the promise of our country. All of our children are born with sort of the same level of intelligence and should be born with the same level of opportunity. But over time, the kids who live in wealthy communities, they develop skills. And the other kids don't have a chance to develop skills. And by the time you're 18 or 20 or being hired for a job, people get confused. They think that people with skills are more intelligent, and they get hired. So we create this enormous gap, and it is not fair to our children. Everybody should have an equal chance. Everyone should have an equal chance.
You say that the property tax system is a rigged system, and that's an insider's game.
Sure.
And that it perpetuates itself because of the interests that are involved in it. The property tax appeals lawyers, the politicians that rely on the donations, and that it becomes this kind of spiraling effect. You wouldn't name any names. You let us do the dirty work about that kind of thing. I mean, because you were talking about politicians, you proposed that politicians not have outside income as property tax appeals lawyers, and that includes some of the biggest names in Democratic politics here in Illinois. And I guess, you know, the Kennedy name is just so iconic and synonymous with Democratic politics, and yet we find you playing the kind of the outsider role this time and kind of eschewing endorsements from Democratic organizations. If you get them, fine, whatever, but that they're not necessary. It just seems an interesting dichotomy as a Kennedy.
Well, I'd go back and look at the history of the Kennedy family, I guess, and look at John Francis Fitzgerald, first Irish Catholic mayor born in the United States in Boston, goes after the machine that exists at that time. President Kennedy fights his way into the Democratic primaries against the establishment, people like Lyndon Johnson, and beats them. My father running against Lyndon Johnson as president of the United States in 1968, Teddy running against Jimmy Carter in 1976. And I think in each of those instances, there are great examples to me, my children, and to every American that just because somebody is in power doesn't mean that they deserve to be. They may not be the best person for the job. And if they are not, if they are hurting our country, we have an obligation, no matter how hard it is, to go after them. I mean, my father, Teddy, Jack, you know, they lose a brother in World War II, and yet they sign up to fight. They sign up to fight. And they think that's the obligation of our country. And I believe it's the obligation of everybody in our state to fight the establishment if the establishment is not performing for the people who are here. It's our government. They work for us. We don't work for them.
Do you believe
it's not that,
that
complicated.
Do you believe that that Democratic establishment here in Illinois is working?
I don't believe so. I think they're holding on to a property tax system that's crushing our state, that's keeping two-thirds of the people who graduate from our high school, three-quarters of them, three-quarters of the kids who graduate from our high schools from being economic contributors to the future of our state. We're sidelining all of those people, and that's not right. And we don't abandon a property tax system when every other state uses income tax and other taxes to fund their schools and have much better outcomes. Everybody in the legislature knows that that's what we need to do. All of the electeds, including leadership. But why don't we do it? Why don't we abandon a property tax system? Well, in my mind, it's because too many people make money off of it. And it's really hard to make money off of a system that's based on income taxes. Because if you want to alter your income taxes, you're taking on the IRS. If you want to alter your property tax system, you're taking on your local assessor. And frankly, with enough pinstripe patronage and well-connected lawyers and a slew of campaign donations, that's not a tough fight.
We're speaking with Chris Kennedy, Democratic candidate for governor of the state of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. A little bit of U2 as we have U2 this weekend in Chicago. They wrap up tonight at Soldier Field. Joining me here in studio, Chris Kennedy, Democratic candidate for governor. We've been talking about kind of the rollout of his deep dives and starting out with the issue of property tax changes and obviously the need to really and that reliance of local schools that creates a fundamental unfairness of your school's as good as your zip code is what it comes down to. And unfortunately, that's been talked about for decades. And now are we starting to see some momentum to change that? But Chris, I wanted to ask you, you know, in this field of candidates, how do you differentiate yourself from the others? I mean, I was at a forum that SEIU, the union, had yesterday, and they had five like fundamental points, issues, and of course, everybody is all for those issues. So how do you end up differentiating? What makes you different from J.B. Pritzker?
Well, I'd say this, that I'm super predictable. I would say that not to say that that's my greatest attribute, but people are going to feel like they know my family, knew how I grew up. They've seen me in Chicago for 30 years. I moved here to serve others in the anti-hunger movement. I run an anti-hunger not-for-profit called Top Box Foods. They know that the people I'm concerned about are the people who need the help the most, and that I see government as something that can help others, can invest in the economy, and can provide our kids great schools and our community's great protection with police and fire. That's what I believe about government. You see a guy like J.B. Pritzker, they catch him on tape, you know, and he's talking about maybe swapping money for an appointment with Governor Blagojevich, and he's using insider language. He's using code words like, I hear you, I hear you. I mean, anybody who's ever watched Goodfellas or one of those mob movies knows that, you know, they're not going to come out and say, if you give me this, I'll give you that. They use code language, and that's part of it. But that's not the sick thing of all of that. The sick thing is when he laughs at his sister's failure, when his sister's bank, Blagojevich, makes fun of his sister's bank going down, and he laughs about that. Look, I have 11 brothers and sisters. My wife has one of five. She has 30 first cousins. I have more than 50. We see everything through that lens. We see ourselves as part of a family, a big American family, and we're going to treat everybody as though they're part of our family too. And when you're part of somebody's family, you don't laugh at their failure. And then to double down and make it worse, not only is he laughing at his sister, he's laughing at the fact that that bank failed because they made subprime loans to poor people in places like Chicago to buy houses they couldn't afford, that they ended up losing, that mark our city today, years later, destroying not only that house that's now vacant and abandoned, but the entire block so that people move away. And then they close the local school, and now the entire neighborhood's, you know, circling the drain. And he and Blagojevich think that that's funny. And no one who thinks that stuff is funny deserves to be the governor of the state of Illinois.
You said super predictability.
Sure.
It almost sounds boring. But no, but I mean, are you saying the others are just, there's unpredictableness about the others?
I think there's something inherently unpredictable about about billionaires, frankly. I think that when you don't have customers, when you don't have clients, where you've never worked for someone else, where you've never had to report, you become careless. And you might become careless in the sense that you pass bad checks so often and you finally get arrested for it. But you can hire a lawyer to clean up that mess. And then you can laugh at other people's failures because it doesn't impact you. Who thought anything was funny about the 2007-8-9 period in America? Who laughed during that period at anything? And now they're laughing at that. They're laughing at us. And that's completely sick behavior.
But you are also a person of means, not of the same wealth level as J.B. Pritzker.
I'm a person of means, but I'm not a mean person. And our parents taught us to be part of a family, to treat each other well, and to look after each other. And that's what we need in our party more than anything else.
Now, some people in the party have said, and even this was even brought up by the head of SEIU Local 1 about, you know, the Democrats have candidates who are supportive of issues that the union supports. They're not making an endorsement at this stage, but they're also saying don't eat each other up because one of you needs to go beat Bruce Rauner. Is there a damage effect of, obviously you all have to distinguish yourselves to the voters, but is there a damaging effect on what might come out of a bruising Democratic primary?
Well, you know, with some wisdom, the primary was set in March, you know, months and months and months before the November general election. That allows our party, and frankly the Republican Party, I suppose, but it allows our party time to heal the wounds, to come together, to create a unified message that we can all agree on and then go to battle with the other party. In this case, it'll in all likelihood be Governor Rauner. So I think there's plenty of time next year to heal the wounds. And I go back to the issue of what it's like to be in a big family. I mean, we would have these massive, very aggressive football games before dinner and during the summer, and people would be bloodied and bruised. And, you know, there was never a discussion of what happened in that game during dinner. It was over. You had to repair the damage, walk into my mother's dinner table, and come together as a family, say grace, and move on. And I think that's what the Democratic Party needs to do. And if you've never competed like that, if you don't know what it's like, but it's totally possible to have an enormous fight with your own family and then come together as one against everybody else. And that's what we should do.
I think there's a fundamental question in this race with your participation
sure.
in it. And it's, you know, obviously the history of the Kennedy family and the legacy. But is it, and maybe it's unfair to ask this, but is that kind of the knowledge and the attitude of the Kennedy family, is that kind of generation doubt? Do you think?
That's a better question for you to answer, the fundants. I don't know.
But you understand what I'm saying. I mean, obviously, you're in the family, but, you know, that's just, to me, I think a very interesting question because of the, you know, all of the Catholics who would have the picture of JFK on the wall, the same as many African-American communities have a picture of Barack Obama on the wall. And I just wonder if this may be a part of the test that you face in this election.
I think that's a better question for pundits and others to answer. I'm gonna run on my record, and when you run a place like the Merchandise Mart, when you're running 90 trade shows a year, when you have operating 25 vertical markets, you understand how the economy works and who it works for and how it can work for everyone. I think that's an incredible vantage point from which to envision the future of Illinois. I know this. Governor Rauner says we need his turnaround agenda in order to get the state moving in the right direction because small businesses and large corporations won't move here unless they get the five things that he's talked about. That's absolutely not true. He's just wrong about that. He probably knows he's wrong, but if he doesn't and he's listening, I'll tell him why he is wrong. More companies have moved to Illinois to open an office for the first time at the Merchandise Mart Center than any other location in the state. That's a big statement, but it's true. I don't even know who the runner-up is. I dealt with thousands of companies in my 25 years at the Merchandise Mart. Not one of those companies ever asked me. Not one of them said, I'd love to come to Illinois, to Chicago, to make money here, but I am worried about the way you draw your state rep districts. Nobody ever asked me about tort reform or workers' comp or right to work or term limits. 0% of the people ever asked me about all of them. It's just not true. What those people want, small businesses and large corporations alike, what they want more than anything else out of their government is predictability. They want to know what their taxes are going to be. They don't want the risk associated with the unknown. Governor Rauner's taken a very narrow state government budget problem, something that has been solved in every other state, and turned it into statewide economic chaos. And that needs to end.
That's Democratic candidate for governor, Chris Kennedy. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you all. Great to be here.
We'll be back with more right after this. Coming up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Keith Wheeler, Republican State Representative from Oswego.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is your Sunday Spin. Earlier in the program, I was talking about how the president was tweeting about the terrorism incidents out in London. And last week, after his foreign trip, he was back on Twitter and he issued this statement. Russian officials must be laughing at the U.S. and how a lame excuse for why the Dems lost the election has taken over the fake news. Well, former Russian ambassador Michael McFaul told MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell that the Russians are indeed laughing, but not in the way that the president suggests.
I think the Russians are laughing. I think that's right. But they're laughing at how easy it is and how our president, unfortunately, is helping with their agenda. Let's just be clear. The NATO and G7, those are our clubs, Andrea. Those are clubs that we set up to advance our national security interests, to advance our prosperity. And the result of this trip has been discord in both of those groups, including some extraordinary things that both the chancellor said, but also her opponent said, and her foreign minister said about unwilling to, continue to cooperate with the United States. Let me be more clearly state it. We can no longer rely on the United States. That is music to Putin's ears.
And indeed, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel during a campaign event, spoke about her meetings with Trump, as well as what the U.S. under Trump means on the world stage.
The times when we could completely count on others, they are over to a certain extent. I've experienced this in the last few days, and that is why I can only say that we Europeans must really take our fate into our own hands.
That's German Chancellor Angela Merkel through a translator. Well, we're going to go back into state politics now, and joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Republican State Representative Keith Wheeler from Oswego. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed the music on the way down with the YouTube bumper music the whole way. Loved it.
Yeah, and of course, we wanted to get you an early start today so that you'd be well prepared when you go to Soldier Field tonight for the concert. Which...
Yeah, I got two important entertainment venues to hit today. I've got my daughter's dance recital this afternoon and then off to Soldier Field for my 36th U2 concert tonight. So
wow, really?
Yeah, big fan.
Wow. That's... Well, if maybe we could just play music and you could just sing along to it.
You know all the words,
right?
I do know the words. Yes. The singing part we're going to leave to Bono.
You'll be singing tonight, I'm sure.
Best I can,
You and 50,000 of your closest friends.
Very good friends, absolutely.
Well, I wanted to have you on because I wanted to talk about kind of the House Republican attitude of what transpired last week in Springfield, the failure to adopt a budget, the fact that we're in continuous session once again, and the fact that we're over 700 plus days without a state budget. And I had Greg Bays on, the head of the Manufacturers Association, earlier, and he believes that there is palpable frustration out in the public. I don't know if it's really gotten to that extent yet, despite this lingering budget impasse, and even suggested it might take something about not having schools open to finally have it hit home to people.
Yeah, no, that's that frustration certainly is felt in my office, of the phone calls we get, with the emails we get from people all across the state. But primarily, the fact that we haven't actually started the budget process is what frustrates me as a second-term legislator the most. We haven't done a real budget since I've been in office. And we haven't even done the first step of that budget process, which is a revenue estimate, which is our protection to have a balanced budget. We just haven't done that since, I guess, May of 2014 was the last one we actually did. And that wasn't even a real budget because we didn't fund the entire year. We had to come in my freshman year, and the first thing we did was fix a budget hole that was left behind from the previous administration. And it has just been an absolutely frustrating process to never really become a thoughtful, articulate approach to how we budget for the state of Illinois.
Well, I know you've even suggested that the Attorney General, that Lisa Madigan, should step in here, and as well as far as to provide, to force the providing of a revenue estimate that everybody, you know, will accept.
Right. I mean, the budget process in Springfield shouldn't be this complicated. I mean, the way it was explained to me by one of my veteran colleagues was you start with the revenue estimate, which is how much money you expect to bring in, and then you divide up that money among the different appropriations committees, and then you meet, present some bills, get those bills passed, get the governor to sign them. That's the really simplified version of what happens. But since I've been in office, we have not even done that first step once yet. And I've always been fearful that we keep running up this deficit spending process by not doing those things. And the speaker has prevented that from coming to the floor. I got so frustrated this year that I actually filed revenue assistance myself, which I don't think has ever been done by a non-leadership, non-chairman legislator. It just hasn't been done.
So when I had Greg Bays on and talked about the grand bargaining that was going on in the Senate and the fact that ultimately that collapsed, Senate Democrats then started moving bills over to the House following suit. And I kind of got the viewpoint that at that point, things were so far off the rails that these were just bills. And I'm not trying to take a critical assessment of their merits, but they're bills that were politically oriented to support Democratic causes, knowing that a Republican governor is going to veto them. Things like a $15 minimum wage and a Democratic version of workers' compensation changes, those kinds of things.
The That's what's frustrating. What we actually dealt with on the floor this last week in Springfield, we never talked about a budget. We talked about these other elements that you mentioned, talking about minimum wage. I wanted to bring up, when we had that discussion on the floor, about the impact that actually has on the state, but also how, what it has impact on small business, and how one study shows that 93,000 jobs will be lost if we implement that. We didn't actually discuss that in any real measure. We just kind of were handed a bill and had to vote on it on the floor. And this happens all the time in Springfield, where we get an hour after an amendment is dropped to review a bill and have to vote on it. I'll give you an example, the school funding bill that went through. I had asked for data on how that impact districts in my area. That data wasn't available until after the vote was already over. Now, how is that a thoughtful process that gives us the best, you know, information to make the decisions we make and how we take care of our residents? It just doesn't seem to work out that way. Unfortunately, I think it's by design.
We're speaking with Republican State Representative Keith Wheeler from Oswego, giving us a lesson on how the sausage gets made in Springfield. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. With a metaphor of the spring legislative session when it comes to a budget. Still haven't found what I'm looking for. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is your Sunday Spin, and I'm joined here by Keith Wheeler, Republican State Representative from Oswego. And I was surprised you didn't just automatically chime into the music right there.
I was playing the air bass guitar there for you. Yeah, that's too bad we can't play music on the House floor. That'd be an appropriate ending piece there for what we've gone through.
Actually, the music would be more like wah, wah, wah. I have a feeling would be more summing up the Illinois legislative process. Yeah, you know, obviously, the governor has his conditions for a budget. Democrats say, well, they're not budget related, but you have things like workers' comp, which I think is economically related.
There's actually two elements there that I'd like to bring up with you. One, work comp is definitely a budget item. I've talked to some of the governor's staff who do the analysis on the actual dollars and cents of what the proposed work comp package that was being discussed in the Senate would entail, and they're talking about tens of millions of dollars of savings directly to the state. Now, that also impacts every single employer in the state. And there's a set of employers that we never seem to talk about enough, and those are the social service providers, especially those who take care of the developmentally disabled. And I've met with several of them. I have one in my district called Markland. The Ray Graham Association invited me to meet with them in DuPage County, and they gave me an example of how their work comp costs have increased over the last decade from about $250,000 to $1.4 million a year. Now, we haven't given them any relief on the top side with what we're reimbursing them for, but they're getting pinched very hard by this expense, and it's preventing them from actually giving their workers raises. So this really is a budget issue across every employer in the entire state, and that ultimately impacts every employee in the entire state.
And when I talked to Greg Bays, it sounded like, indeed, they were very close on coming up with something until the politics of the day took over.
That's my understanding. I actually pay pretty close attention to that particular issue, and I oftentimes am one of the lead, I guess, challengers on the floor and in committee with respect to work comp issues, because I've been paying work comp insurance for all my career as a business owner. And it was so close. I mean, I was like, oh, I can't believe we're going to get a deal. This is so exciting. We're finally going to get something accomplished. It takes one of those chips off the table that we can move forward on some other issues with. You know, property tax would be the next thing on my list that I talk about all the time, because property taxes in Kendall County, where I live, are the highest in the state. And that's a big deal.
Well, let's talk about property taxes, because obviously, you know, that's a very topical issue. But the fact of the schools being so over-reliant on property taxes, and to truly alleviate that property tax burden would require more state revenue and the state paying a larger share to allow a rebating or whatever of taxes. But yet that's a huge step. And when we're talking about revenue increases now, tax increases, it's just to try to fill budget holes. It's not to take the next step that people have been talking about for decades about how to lessen the reliance on property taxes and stop funding schools by zip code.
No, it agreed. And that was one of the thoughts. You know, we had a school funding reform, I guess, task force committee. We've had several different iterations of that, even in the short period I've been in Springfield. And while they're
and after covering it for 35 years, trust me, there are plenty of studies, and I'll be happy to show you. They're all sitting gathering dust, you know.
Right, but there seemed to be a movement to say that hey, we could come together on some things here. And in true Springfield fashion, we get to the last day, and the day before the last day, amendments drop. And, you know, they go to committee, and we immediately get to meaning not me personally, I'm not on that committee, but others in the committee and our staff, and analyze those as quickly as they can. And then you get to the floor the next day, and you're still trying to figure out the data. I'm getting data from advocates that doesn't match up with what our analysis shows. So you're trying to figure out what is the answer here, but because we've run it up against the last moment of the clock, again, there's no time to really be thoughtful, provide, you know, in rebuttal to what's been brought up, you'd have to just vote on it, and it wasn't ready.
But how do we get to that point with schools, with property taxes? And look, everybody hates property taxes. I mean, it's the most onerous. And frankly, to me, when you're basing kind of an artificial wealth measure from an 18th century version of when property meant wealth, and relying that as a system of funding government it's so antiquated.
No, and it actually circles back into many things, because property taxes are a business expense as well. And in mm-hmm. Cook County, it's even more acute because there's just a shift between residential and commercial property. And as a business person, and I want to see economic growth, because that's ultimately the answer that solves a lot of our problems. We don't ever seem to talk about that in Springfield. If we lowered the property tax burden on business owners, you're going to have more opportunity for businesses to create themselves. Property taxes get paid whether you make money or not. It's not like an income tax where you pay a percentage of your profit. You're paying that as an absolute expense. You cannot have your space to operate in unless you actually pay those property taxes. So it affects so many things, residents, commercial. Everybody's impacted by it, and we have to find a better balance, and we have to grow our economy in Illinois in order for us to dig out of the hole we're in for so many different things.
But when we look at what the governor had proposed as a property tax freeze that also would make it easier for residents to create a referendum to hike or lower property taxes, it still seems that freeze, it hamstrings those governments, it hamstrings school districts without anything to make up for that kind of thing. And in fact, you know, and we've seen it throughout the state where local governments or school districts hearing just the talk of a property tax freeze will immediately go to referendum so that they don't lose anything. And how many districts across the state has that taken place in?
Right. No, and then that's what goes back to the word that seems also to be missing in my experience as a legislator, and it's a balance. I mean, we have to understand on both sides of this. There's a property tax payer issue that they're being overwhelmed. I get emails, phone calls, pretty angry discussions with neighbors about how they can't afford to stay in their house anymore. They're going to look at other states, other opportunities. At the same time, I have kids in school. I want those programs to be in place for them so they have the best opportunity to learn and create a future for themselves. So there is a balance in here that we have to find. But the way we do things in Springfield, there's really not an opportunity for balance, because it's always just wait to the deadline, lots of pressure, push it through. And that is not a great way to run a government.
Well, and if there's a issue with property taxes now, let's see what happens in Washington if they do move forward with any kind of tax reform. And has been talked about a lot, we're going to have big, you know, your personal deduction's going to increase, but that state and local tax deduction's going to go away. And that means you won't be able to deduct your property taxes off your federal income taxes anymore. And that may be a wake-up call for some folks.
No, I mean, we had discussions. I mean, there's a group of legislators that I came with. We call ourselves the sophomore class right now because we're in our second terms. And we really try to get together when the opportunities present themselves in Springfield, when we're not, you know, late at night in committees and other things, to discuss what are the solutions that we could move forward. What are the things we could do in light of the fact what's happening in Washington, what's happening at the local level, and of course what's happening in Springfield, where we don't seem to have the opportunity to really collaborate. And even with the legislators on the other side of the aisle that I've gotten to know pretty well, we just don't get a chance to have those discussions. It's always the last minute thing, pressures from other places like Washington. that just come in and dictate what we're going to do next. And it's really unfortunate that the process doesn't work more collaboratively and inclusively.
Then we might have an answer. We might find what we're looking for, right? Keith Wheeler, Republican State Representative from Oswego, thank you so much for joining me this morning, and have a great time at the U2 concert.
Appreciate
tonight.
It. Thank you so much.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guest, Greg Bays, the President and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, Democratic Governor candidate Chris Kennedy, and Republican State Representative Keith Wheeler. Most of all, I want to thank all of you, and I hope you've enjoyed the U2 bumper music this morning as we try to bring a little bit of some great music
right.
to the sad nature of politics.
A little of the flavor of last night at Soldier Field.
It had to be something.
And that's why we're happy to announce that Bono will be here today, The Edge. Who else? Those are my only U2 names that I can remember right now. It doesn't matter. Neither is
true. You should
true.
Have asked Keith Wheeler. He said this is like his 36th concert.
U2 concert? Yeah. I was somebody asked me if I went last night, and I guess I would have liked to have gone, but I decided that my dislike for a crowd of 70,000 people is greater than my like.
You know, I was talking to Rick Kogan about the very same thing, and I said that this must be a sign of our age or something. That just you know, well, it's like remember when you would go to a concert at the drop of a hat?
Yeah, you pile right into a crowd. You couldn't care less. Now all I'm thinking is, oh, I got to drive. Oh, the parking. Oh, it's going to take forever.
The security lines.
Oh, yeah. You also get to see U2 at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
But at Soldier Field, though, play the Park West and I'll definitely be there. Go there and I'll definitely be there.
Find us convenient venues, please.
You kids get off my lakefront.